Sci-Fi Radio.
Extra.
Konnichiwa and welcome. You tuned in to Quiet Fire Radio, the podcast we dive into the world of anime, manga, and all things otaku culture. I'm Kyle. With me is Kenny and Aaron. And it is an extra because it's actually Thursday that we're recording, and the episode was meant to go out yesterday, and I got called away for work on an emergency. And Aaron got married, and Kenny dealt with bad customers at, well, no, customers, clients.
It wasn't bad, it was just many,
yeah.
Lots.
That's why we haven't had a chance to tell you about dinosaurs, but that is still coming next episode.
Dinosaur.
Similar situation with Tifa. Lots of stuff came up, things are a little bit crazy, but we're still alive and we're still kicking and we're doing a lot better than we were 6 months ago, that's for sure.
Somehow,
and we're
yes.
feeling a little extra.
Oh, yeah.
Have we made that joke before?
I feel like we must have.
I mean, we must have, but
we must have.
If we, I don't think we have. And
how have we not made that joke before?
Anyway. If you are new, hello and welcome. So
you've come at a weird time.
We are instead doing an episode on children who chase lost voices, which Kenny found. It is a older Makoto Shinkai film, but it checks out. but whether it's good is another matter altogether. But we press the button. You got the popcorn
and a slushy.
Ooh, Maltesers.
Shh. It's starting.
Cinema Club. I checked out during it.
Yeah, I checked out.
good segue, all the same.
Yeah, children who chase lost voices, Hoshibo or Kodomo, which the actual translation is more to do with like children chasing stars.
Yeah, I was gonna say Hoshi means star. So what's
does.
Going on?
The actual original. It's also known as Journey to Agatha, in certain areas. So it's,
which makes sense because it's about a girl journeying to Agatha.
Oh, actually, it was renamed to that in 2012. Interesting.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
Is this a Philosopher's Stone, Sorcerer's Stone thing?
I don't know. However.
What was that other Journey to movie?
Center of the Earth?
No. No. The one where the girl was imagining her friend.
Oh.
Journey to Terabithia?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Bridge to Terabithia.
That wasn't a girl imagining her friend. That was a girl dying tragically.
Oh, Bridge to Terabithia. Oh.
Wow. I didn't know we could have that effect.
Childhood drama.
So, it's.
I mean, it's like hearing I want to stay at your house from Cyberpunk.
Oh,
yeah. So, yeah, the literal translation of the Japanese is Children Who Chase Stars. This came out in 2011. It was produced by Comics Way Films as a studio. And it is a original film by Makoto Shinkai. Unsurprisingly, he did
and if
everything.
If you're new here, Makoto Shinkai is something of a big name in our circles.
Mm-hmm.
He's has a very storied history of making his own films and being sort of like this sole operator, even when he's given a studio and minions.
Yeah. So you've probably heard of Your Name, Weathering With You, Suzume. Those were all his more recent films.
Big names. They arrived on cinema screens like over the past few years.
Mm-hmm. But this predates that. Oh, Garden of Words was him as well.
Yeah.
I kept forgetting that. Yeah. That was 2 years after this.
Frankly, if it's one of those big, glossy, glitzy anime movies and it's got a lot to do with water and rain, it's probably one of his.
Yeah.
He does love water and rain.
He does. But that's the thing. He does incredible work animating those.
He does.
And
he does.
That's what made this one so odd was almost a complete like lack thereof.
Well, there was a lot of water in it.
There was, but like almost.
And fluids.
Yeah.
Fluids.
Fluids in the lungs.
Well, I meant the coating the body fluids.
Oh, that was weird too.
Yeah.
And the biblically accurate angel wing god thing.
Not giving spoilers.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. So look,
biblically accurate water.
you're not wrong. So
wine.
This was released in 2011. that's a good one. It runs for 116 minutes.
Start calling it that now.
So just shy of 2 hours. Biblically accurate water is wine. Okay, that's pretty funny. Oh. All right, these two have died.
Sorry, Red Bulls have kicked in. I'm good.
Yeah. So, Children Who Chase Lost Voices is that all of these descriptions do not correctly describe what is going on. So you can watch it on Crunchyroll in some areas, and in other areas it's on Amazon Prime. But the key thing here is that they say it's a coming-of-age story involving young love and a mysterious song coming from a crystal radio left as a memento by an absent father that leads a young heroine deep into a hidden world. All those things are accurate, but they're
but
not...
very incidental.
They're all, I wouldn't say incidental, but they're kind of presented as if they're a good thing. And none of these are good things. No. So the main story focuses on a girl called Asuna. She's been forced to grow up because her father died and her mother is a nurse always working night shifts. So she's always looking after herself, doing the cooking, making sure the house runs and all that.
Quite alone.
She's got a weird sort of cat thing called Mimi, who you know is not really a cat, but... It kind of reminded me of like Nausicaa's sort of squirrel thing.
I was going to say, he's like you might recognize him. He was famous for Nausicaa.
Yeah.
He's been in that as a supporting actor.
Yeah, it bears strange red markings on her fur. One day while walking to her, it says clubhouse. She's basically, I'm not sure what year this is meant to be set in, but it's clearly within like 10 years of the end of World War II.
I'd say more than that.
Maybe 20 years.
The gun emplacements from that time still exist today, so I think this is set like reasonably modern-ish days.
Well, then what? How did the other guy then do the fighting? Substitute teacher, because we saw flashbacks towards the end of him fighting in a war, and it very much looked like Europe.
It's very ambiguous.
For the record, this is a fantasy story, but it's based in our world, but also kind of not.
Fantasy World War II.
Yeah.
They
with the fantasy painter.
So they say she's got a clubhouse. It's an all abandoned Jesus. It's an abandoned old military post, sort of like a gun emplacement, with an underground sort of tunnel where she hangs out underneath the rock face. So it's clearly aged, but you okay?
I'm good. Just
you're looking for your sanity down there somewhere?
I'm keeping it together.
So he's having a great night.
So she goes up onto her place that she hangs out, this old dilapidated gun emplacement, and on top of it listens to a crystal radio, which has a weird song, sometimes picks up radio, but a couple of times it's picked up this weird music and she's like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And this then ends up having a boy named Shun showing up, who he's...
an alien.
I mean...
And I feel like Atlantean would be a better description.
Agathian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, all right, so let's cut to the chase. It's about the Hollow Earth, technically, but it's not, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Agatha is said to be a legendary kingdom on the inner surface of the Earth. This came about because it was apparently based on a 1970s idea by French writer and colonial officer Louis Jacquelot, because in his book, he said that he'd been given access to a 15,000-year-old Indian manuscript that told of an ancient city of Agatha, its rise and fall. And originally, the idea was about an ancient Indian city, a capital city. It had nothing to do with the Hollow Earth. However, America... and Europe got a hold of this idea. And they kind of then expanded on it to have this idea of it being on the inside of, the inside of the planet.
Yeah, it is to say that the Earth has a burning hot core, which is a sun for an entire internal inner planet, which runs along the inside of the shell, with gravity pointing sort of the other way to us on the outside.
It's where the city of Shambhala is, for instance.
Get out of here. That's... no, it isn't. Shambhala is Himalayan.
Yeah, but it's disappeared, and like that's where it is. And also, there's a saucer to Venus,
Yeah, where are you getting this one?
This is from Walter Siegmeister's 1960s book on Agatha, and this particular poster was on the wall in the film behind the guy, the substitute teacher in his house. Yeah.
I'm going to need to background check that. I have heard of Agatha in the sort of conspiracy theorist circle. Mm-hmm. This goes to the whole, you know, ice wall around Antarctica and Hyperborea and all the kind of the mythical nations that there are around the world. There's very many of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, Agatha is always, it's a funky fantasy subject, but you get the weirdos who take it in a different direction and think, it's a conspiracy and it's real.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of conspiracy countries, we are the actors.
Oh, yes, yeah, Australia. Australia is real.
Here in Australia, we are all paid actors. Yeah. I don't know how we're paid and I would like my paycheck.
Australia doesn't actually exist. Where do they think like the set for Australia is?
Probably the same place they filmed the moon on location.
it's Mexico, except we don't have the red filter on.
That would do it. You wouldn't be able to tell without the filter.
Yeah. I don't know.
No, it's like
a dry desert-y.
Like think like places you've been in Australia, but then put the kind of the sepia yellow red across it. Now it's in Mexico. In it.
That's why we love our old El Paso and our burritos.
Hell yeah.
I was going to say, not really, because it's more like California, but with that sepia filter applied because it's on fire.
Oh, and California is where all the actors are.
That makes sense.
And California is also where we exported all the gum nuts to that now they have a heap of eucalyptuses which explode. So, our bad. Look, it wasn't us.
You guys decided to transplant something from Australia, a hostile landscape, and plant it in your backyard. What in the crumb's name did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. it's like the South African sandbox tree where it drops the exploding
coat? It has grenades.
Yeah.
It is a tree covered in spikes which drops explosives
which are spiky too, and that's how it, you know, because it explodes, that's how it spreads its seeds.
If
it's
it
so
had
funny.
Legs it would be a bloody against the Geneva Convention.
But yeah,
Kenny, we need to do science.
Not allowed to do that anymore, not since the cactus incident.
God.
Turns out if you give cactus legs, that is a war crime.
It just was a hug.
No, then the Japanese get a hold of it and they say it's called a cactuar. And
yeah, no. Anyway, so like the whole, going back to the topic at hand, Agatha and the Hollow Earth. So Agatha started off with that idea and then it kind of, you know, grew legs and people kind of took it from being an ancient city to then kind of taking it in a different direction for like, to be like its own, you know, Hollow Earth sort of idea. And that kind of really stuck in like the 60s, the 1960s, which is where Walter Siegmeister's book was written. Again, all of these stories were popularized and kind of come up with as an idea and a response based on like the original, you know, this ancient text, an Indian manuscript, giving you an idea of finding a location of an ancient city that started in the 1870s.
Ancient civilizations, ancient magic, ancient gods, the usual Conan stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So worth noting is that this is not a film really about that type of place. It is much more akin in aesthetic and look to, say, Spirited Away, you know, where it's kind of the landscape is a little bit odd. There are unusual creatures. People still do exist there, but they're not the people you know.
It's kind of Mayan Aztec-y kind of.
Yeah, in some areas. And then in other areas, it's kind of just dilapidated. But the story focuses on Asuna, her substitute teacher.
Who turns out to be part of a secret society that's trying to get to Agatha technology.
Mr. Morisaki. And then Shun's brother. We won't explain how that came across.
Who names their boys Shin and Shun?
Well,
terrible parents, that's her.
They have a half-brother that's Shun. They don't like him. He is shunned.
And then I can let you know it's the same voice actor for both. So there's a lot to like about this film, aesthetically, thematically, musically, and like pacing-wise.
It's got interesting ideas.
But the script is god-awful.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's terrible.
It feels like a rush job. And
it really does.
And also feels really long at the same time.
Yeah.
Get rid of the speaking tracks and dub it yourself. Trust me, whatever you make up, Ghost File style, will be better.
So
should we?
Are we doing riff tracks now?
Look, we could set aside a weekend and like write some scripts.
And get some biblically accurate water.
The biblically accurate water helps with the writing.
It does. So look, the overarching idea, the artwork, everything else is great, but it is left down by the way the script is handled. Mm. So like Asuna should be... every character is far too willing to go with the flow. Mm. Even the people who are clearly meant to be the antagonists, everyone's just kind of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
we're friends now.
Yeah.
Very acquiescent. It's not very human. Yeah. It almost feels like they have to say yes to make the plot move forward. It's like
it's
a
yes
movie.
And movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So like it feels like Asuna in particular just basically gets dragged along with everything and just agrees to everything. Like, do you want to go through the doorway to Agatha? Yeah, why not? I've been pulled through. Oh, let's go.
She's not so much a protagonist as she is luggage.
Yeah, like she's not even a vessel for narrative. She is just literally the stone being pulled along to introduce you to each
other. Not even a reluctant heroine, just a... Yeah, I guess she was there.
Yeah, right?
She was indeed present.
Yeah. Like, it was certainly a film of time.
When they established her initially as such an individual that was capable of looking after herself, mm-hmm. and then they just dropped the ball.
Yeah.
They're like, look at how independent she is. She's cooking dinner. She's making breakfast. Yeah, yeah. She's looking after herself. She's got she's great at school. She's very switched on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, I guess I'll do this. There's a cute boy involved, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. actually, hang on, teenage girls. I take back what I was saying.
Yeah, but like the cute boy thing kind of only works for that initial segment. Like
that initial cute boy.
Yeah,
not
just
the following cute boy.
Not the following cute
boy. It's like you say, it's like she is like very, very capable, and then because the script requires her to not be, she no longer is. She's Asuna.
From Sword Art Online.
The curse of the name.
I mean, the thing is as well is like the only character who has true agency is Mr. Murasaki. So you go, the idea in this story, which is not in line with the rest of the Agatha mythos, is that Agatha is kind of the world of the dead. Like that's the way that's being treated in this. It's similar to Hades. It's similar to like, you know, there are gatekeepers that prevent access. You must know the way. There are only certain entry points, yada, yada, yada.
That part was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
though.
Right.
Like one of the gatekeepers to the entrance to Agatha is it's an ancient creature.
Yeah, the ancient whale.
It's an ancient unevolved whale that's sort of just been here for thousands of years, not evolving and undying. And it's just like, that's a cool idea. Are you going to explore that or do anything else like that again?
Well, they did it twice because you had the Bear Guardian thing.
I suppose,
and
but
that was the introduction
that wasn't
to the
so
concept.
Much, yeah, I guess.
And then they had that, and it's like, okay, the Guardians are kind of losing their minds because of the world they're living in and pollution and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, no, what Kenny means is like creatures that are from frozen in time.
Frozen in time. Oh, yeah.
The bear thing that was just sort of like almost kind of a generic monster.
Yeah.
It was the bear thing that actually put me onto this movie. I saw the clip of her first encountering that thing on the bridge, and Shan encountering it and sort of fighting it off. And I'm just like, is this a Ghibli movie? There's so much of this that looks like a Ghibli movie.
Mm. Location does lean towards the Ghibli-esque.
And it's just, it put me in mind of the whole thing that was being said about Shinkai not long ago, like how he is, quote unquote, the next Miyazaki. And he simply isn't.
No.
He is the Makoto Shinkai.
He is.
He's the guy who does the stuff with the rain and the water.
Yeah. And
Ghibli does the food.
Yes. I mean, they do the food and they do the,
like the
proportions, the character proportion designs.
The crying.
Fantastically magical worlds. Mm. It's... Everyone has their own strengths. Don't try to be someone else. Be yourself.
Yeah.
And that's
Shinkai's done that.
Yeah.
He has done that. Unfortunately, this wasn't one of his best outings. And going back to what we were talking about with like the mythos of this. So it does... They talk about in the story about how it's like aligned with Hades and the underworld and that whole idea of the dead realm. Mm-hmm. And it's because that apparently in this place you can resurrect the dead because there is a god or god of some type that is biblically accurate, we might add. And it's, yeah, it's really weird. But that's the reason the substitute teacher...
I'd go so far as to say it's Lovecraftian.
Yeah. It's the reason the substitute teacher wants to go here and, you know... Asuna's just kind of pulled along with it. She's not going there to resurrect anyone.
She has no reason to want to go there for its power. It's like,
yeah,
she has nothing really. Like, she's got dead parent, naturally, or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yep. That was also like a weird thing. Like, why was Shun trying to meet her?
Shun,
yeah. Why was Shun trying to meet her? Because the implication was that, you know, if this is the land of the dead, is that her father reincarnated?
Oh, I thought it was her cousin. Because
we thought the dad might have been from Agartha?
Yes, which is why he had the crystal.
That's why he brought the crystal up. But then
none of those things are answered, ever.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot of things set up, a lot of interesting concepts, and then they're just not tied up.
Yeah.
A lot of animes that you'll find, there's just, they don't stick the landing.
Yeah, I was going to say, the dismount was terrible on this.
Like, yeah. Also, the dub.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, how did they pronounce Quetzalcoatl's?
You don't
say... Quetzalcoatlus or something?
Yeah.
Quetzalcoatl? I think that was how they pronounced it.
Yeah. The literal translation in Nahuatl is feathered serpent. That's what it means. It's a deity from Aztec culture.
Quetzalcoatl, yeah.
Yeah, Quetzalcoatl. They Quetzalcoatl or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. The dub's incredibly bad.
Unsay that word.
Yeah, right? So the Quetzalcoatls in this story are kind of used as the guardians, the keepers of the dead. You know, kind of fits in with the lore of Aztec. Not quite accurate, but...
Wait a minute. Is that what they were trying to say when they said that?
Yeah.
I kept zoning out.
Yeah.
No, did you not have subtitles on?
I didn't.
That's how we knew what they were trying to say.
Because Emma watched it with me and she was screaming. She said, this is the dumbest film ever.
I was at work watching it. I was like, oh, please tell me that, like... This is just like a dubbing thing where like they tried to keep the Japanese
for me because
style.
I didn't have the subtitles on. I just said, oh, okay, they made up a word.
They were
trying to say Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah.
Ah,
the god of life, light, and wisdom, lord of the day and winds, ruler of the west.
I knew that word when I was 10. Thank you, Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so the keepers of the dead are, you know, this, and they keep saying it, and they keep saying it wrong. And I'm sitting there going, who was allowed to organize the dub? Like,
yeah, who was in charge of directing the voice actors on that one? Because I'm sure the voice actors would have read that and tried to read it correctly.
Yeah.
But then I feel like the director would have come in and be like, we watched the original Japanese dub of this and they pronounced it this way, so we're going to be continuing it that way.
Someone please bring me the casting agent in chains and the bloopers reel.
I mean, you're not wrong. I believe this was done by... G Kids, which obviously did a fair bit of the dubbing stuff for
Quetzalcoatl's.
Quetzalcoatlies. But it's not great.
Look, it's
in any sense of the word.
It's an interesting thing to look at. It is part of a very, very good anime creator's back catalogue. Fun ideas, like, you know, show it to your DM, D&D players. There's rich stuff here, but oh my.
Yeah.
Like, this is probably someone's favorite movie, and I don't judge them.
There was originally a Sentai Filmworks dub, and then a secondary dub created by, in Miami, Florida, at Centauro Communicato. I don't know which one is which. I'm not sure which one we watched because ours is an older copy.
Anyone we know in the English cast?
I don't think so. I didn't pick up on anything.
It's just because dub actor, but then it doesn't tell you which dub it's from.
I misread one of those last names as Herzog.
It's Herzog, actually. Yeah,
I'm just imagining Werner Herzog in this anime. This land, this Agartha. A terrible wasteland of the dead. It reflects the stagnant soul of the writer and his uncreative ways.
Yeah.
I love that man. He brings me joy.
So the 2022 dub was G-Kids.
Have you ever stared into the eyes of a chicken?
The original was 2012 by Sentai Filmworks. So I do wonder if we've got the older dub.
I feel like we do.
Because, yeah. And if that's the case, Stephen Foster
Where
is to blame.
Where the hell did you find that DVD?
Had it for ages. Like, you know.
$2 bargain bin at Red Dot.
I mean.
Did you?
Not Red Dot, but
Sanity.
I can let you know that he was the voice director for Ghost Stories as well.
Oh no!
Then this should have been better.
Oh my god!
Right. Just having a look through this, and I'm not seeing anything recent.
I picked on that one.
yeah, you made a full shark on the audio. It was so cool.
Let me see if I can make a shark again.
No. But yeah, I'm not actually seeing anything here that's recent. Like, all this stuff is quite old. So he did do Garden of Words, directing of that, Voices of a Distant Star, Space Pirate Captain Harlock, Steel Angel Karumi.
Oh man, that takes me back.
Yeah. Wow. High School
did you
of
watch
the Dead.
Steel Angel Karumi?
It was one of the few anime DVDs at my Civic Video.
Same, right?
My first email was karumis_hot@hotmail.com.
Oh god.
Because of the final episode.
Yeah. Le Chevalier d'Ion as well. He did the dub for that.
I don't want to hear it now.
Devil May Cry animated series, but I think that's the original one.
Yeah.
Which was actually kind of cool.
Clannad, Kanan, Appleseed, Ex Manica, 5 centimeters a second. So he's not a bad director. So I'm wondering what happened. Because, I mean, well, actually, no, we know what happened. The script isn't great to begin with. Let's be blunt here. Mm.
Every great anime director has kind of a disappointment. I think to balance this out, we should look at one of Miyazaki's disappointing movies later.
Tales of Earthsea.
Yeah.
That's not... Well, that's the wrong Miyazaki, though. It's Goro Miyazaki, his son.
The other disappointment.
Yeah, exactly. I said that in the chat and you were like, burn!
Look, harsh, but yes.
Okay, so the list of dubbing here is for the Seraphim dub, which was the dub done with Sentai Filmworks.
Okay.
So Hilary Haag is the main voice of Asuna.
That last name's familiar.
David Matranga is Mr. Morisaki. Matranga is... He's Birdholt in Attack on Titan, Shoto in My Hero Academia.
Shoto!
Hideki Hinata in Angel Beats. Yeah, right? So he's got a pretty... He was in Steel Angel Karumi back in the day too.
Oh, come on.
We keep coming back to this.
Are we going to have to do an episode on that?
I think we might.
I was about to say that.
God Serena and Edola Citizen and Additional Voices and Fairy Tale. Like, pretty much anything this other guy's done, he's been involved in, so...
Hilary Haag...
Yes?
...was in Steel Angel Karumi.
She was also...
I'm sensing a trend here.
She was Talisa Testarossa in Fullmetal Panic.
Oh,
she was in D&D Angel and Ghost Stories.
Bubblegum Crisis 2040 as Nene. Wow, I know her very well because I grew up with 2040.
This is a lot of the early dub stuff.
So it looks like they're all part of the Texas crew, like the Texas voiceover stuff. So I reckon these are the people who are also voice acting because a lot of them did stuff with ADV. So they were probably doing stuff alongside Spike Spencer, Tiffany Grant, and the rest of the crew who were doing Neon Genesis. So yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, these are like...
Yep, still Talitha Testarossa in Full Metal Panic for Mofu. So yeah, Air Gear.
What was Werner Herzog in?
Oh, Air Gear.
Man, that needs a proper adaptation.
Yes.
It really does. Man, this guy just hasn't stopped. Hillary hasn't stopped voice acting and neither has David.
Yeah.
Like, they're still voice acting to this day as voiceover artists.
What's
their
most recent?
I can't say for certain because there's so many here. Hero Without a Class Who Even Needs Skills, Bad Girl... My Instant Death Ability is Overpowered, Loner Life in Another World, Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night, Chain Soldier, Dreaming Boy is a Realist, Dangers in My Heart, Insomniacs After School, Dark Gathering, Isekai Life, Demon Girl Next Door, Senryu Girl. So yeah, like, that's just Hillary. David's kind of in the similar thing. You have a look at his and his are all, you know, Lazarus, Night of the Living Cat, Gorilla's Go-To Girl.
Hey.
Zenshu, he was a soldier for one episode and died. so
I mean, that's how Zenshu works.
He was Wolfwood in Trigun Stargaze.
Hey.
Oh,
and sentenced to be a hero, he was Xylo, the main character. So there you go. So like these are like long serving actors.
These are lifers, yeah.
Unfortunately, the direction on this was, I mean, the direction was bad, but the story was bad. It needed rewriting to be clearer and to provide an explanation for why the actors were, the characters were behaving the way they were.
It just needed a little more overall.
It really did, yeah. Now look, we're not saying it's an absolute not don't watch film.
It's a flawed.
It's just a flawed. It's like a 5 out of 10. Mm. Like it's very middling.
Yeah.
It could have been really good, and I think depending if you watch it in Japanese, it might be easier to get past some of it, because the dub I did notice was different from the subtitles I had on screen.
I'm trying to think how to say it. It's like, it's not to say that I'm glad that I watched it.
I feel like if we watched it at a younger age, this definitely would have been like a nostalgic favorite. But watching it as adults who have been exposed to so much media, it's kind of like...
I can judge it harshly.
Yeah.
Like, okay, there is a bit I need to say at the end. I don't know if this is even spoilers or not. They get to a place where it is this big, enormous hole leading down to where like the final goal is. And they have to climb this sheer cliff face for a day and a night.
Are you talking about the angle where it looks like there's, it's just the distance?
No. after they return from the crazy, biblically accurate nonsense that happens at the end.
They just walk back up.
They just walk up. There was a comfortable staircase ramp up to it. It's just like, we have to climb down. Or we could take those stairs over there.
Sure.
Part of the ritual.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I laughed and laughed and laughed at that. It's during the credits you see them walking up and then walking up the stairs.
It ends in a weird spot as well.
Right? Like I said, the dismount's super terrible.
A lot of it is predictable. Some of it wasn't. Mm. When I heard that it was going to be like, a new substitute teacher, I thought it was going to be an adventure with Shun. But obviously it's not. However, it's a whole, like, it did subvert some expectations, but then it just kind of gave up. Like, I will say, like, you know, the Ark of God sort of thing, like, that whole sequence was really cool, but the way we got to it was just kind of a bit like, but why though?
That's the thing. It's very J.J. Abrams. A lot of setups, no payoff.
Yeah. And I mean, thankfully we know Makoto's films get much better after this.
So. When he just sticks to his own, like his proper wheelhouse, when it's a bit more, I don't know if you can really call them grounded, but more like set in a recognizable reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Garden of Words was the next film he did after this.
This predated Garden of Words.
So this is one of the first full-length films. I think it's his second full-length film that he did.
Mad.
So I do wonder if like this was kind of a testing of the waters and on ideals and not having enough time to produce such a full-length film.
Now I can kind of see it. If like one of his greater influences when he was younger was Miyazaki, this is very much his sort of a thing. So
yeah.
Ah, damn. Now I just sort of see it for like...
as a tribute, in a way.
Not really a tribute, just amateurish trying to be like...
trying to be a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, sorry, you were going to say something.
Not to psychoanalyze or anything.
But yeah, look, I mean, the film itself could be a lot better. Also, Asuna is sixth grade. So that's what, like 11 or 12 years old?
The heck you say?
Yeah, I've just found that.
That teacher should have left her... behind,
brother.
All right.
But you are right. The teacher should have left her behind.
Before you knew that knowledge, how old would you have reckoned that she was?
Like 14. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, still
very
not
ambiguous
good.
Age. It's hard to really
mid-teens.
But like I clearly thought she was quite young.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it was like middle school, which is kind of like 13, 14. Mm. A coming of age in year six, the sixth grade, because you've got, you're in year five.
You're 10. And then, so year six, you're 11.
Yeah, because year one, you're 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least here in Australia. And Japan's the same, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, so like sixth grade. So she's not even end of middle school. Like I thought she would have been like year 9, year 8.
Given her independence.
Yeah.
And like her capabilities.
Yeah. So
and boys?
Yeah. Also, they're like, you know, Shin, a mysterious boy about 2 years older than Asuna. So he's 13? Like, really? Like, yeah, no.
I have more questions than when I started this episode.
Right? There's a lot in here that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So here's some background as well. Shinkai visited London after he worked on 5 centimeters a second in 2008. He then returned to Japan in 2009 to start working on the film, and he released 2 concept drawings of it in December 2009. Noted most of his works in the past decade were stories about characters who have to part ways with those they hold dear, but he wanted to take the theme further to deal more specifically on how to overcome loss.
Interesting.
And I would not say the characters in this overcame loss.
There's some of that in the end.
They had no choice, which is what the reality is. He revealed critical information in 2010 about the plot and all that, and a teaser. And with his previous films, he served as director, screenwriter. Takeo Nishimura served as character designer again. Takumi Tanji served as art director. Tenmon again collaborated as music composer. So these are all people who he regularly works with, and they did great. It's just that the story is where he's kind of let it down, and I feel like he wasn't quite sure how to, I guess, push it forward, because 5 centimeters a second from memory was only 55 minutes or an hour. 63 minutes.
This was back when he was doing his usual Makoto Shinkai, though, and just doing it as a solo thing, though.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that one was...
Remember the bloody CGI in 5 centimeters a second.
Yeah, right? Mm. But yeah, so that was only 63 minutes in length. So this is his first full feature-length film. Like, proper feature-length.
I mean, if you put it like that...
Like, it's flawed, but it's not bad for your first feature-length.
Mm.
Like, yeah. And 5 centimeters a second was bad. No, I feel like maybe he didn't have enough ideas to fill the time, but he had enough visual ideas that he wanted to convey.
And the visuals are still pretty spectacular.
Oh, they are. They absolutely
what are,
are
they called? The creatures in the shadows that start chasing them down. Those are delightful.
The Redeads from Legend of Zelda?
Yeah, it's like
kind of, but yeah.
The Uta or something like
that. Okonoko or something like that.
Yeah.
Oshinoko?
Someone has just littered the entire description with Quetzalcoatl everywhere.
Reincarnated as a Quetzalcoatl.
Cattle. Oh, the Izoku.
That's the one. Yeah.
I would like to point out that she walked the whole night through mud, and she definitely had trench foot at the end of that.
Also, if she's 11, she would have gotten like 200 meters in and be like, carry me.
Yeah, pretty good. God, you're so right.
Back in my days, kids could walk for several kilometers before getting tired.
Before getting trench foot. So yeah, look.
Back in my days, we didn't get trench foot. You only get trench foot because of all the Coca-Colas in your diet.
But yeah, look,
all the TV your kids are watching.
Back in my day, we used babies as furniture.
Okay, that's enough. So look, you kind of get the idea that yeah, it's not as good as it could be. I'm surprised the critical reception was so good, considering how many failed opportunities in this there are for storytelling. Like, we discuss this frequently on the show, that Japan loves the idea and then the story continues. They don't necessarily have to wrap everything up. But in this specific case, there were so many things left open that needed to be answered for the story to feel fulfilling, that dismount, as you said, doesn't provide that answer. And, you know, The film is, you know, significant at the time for introducing, you know, someone outside of Miyazaki doing something of a high artistic value.
Mm-hmm.
However, outside of the art, the story is where the problem lies. And I feel like if Makoto Shinkai made this today, it would be much more verbose. It would have a lot more meat on the bone, if that makes sense. There would be a connection with her to Agatha. There would be a reason why...
I mean, there
why...
kind of, there already was the connection
I know,
her,
but
her
like
dad.
A very clear explanation of it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't...
And she'd have a reason to be there.
Exactly. Like, she would... that would have given her the agency to then go and follow him through. Whereas it's kind of just a bit like, I could take it or leave it, you know? Mm. So, yeah, it's interesting... it's not going to blow your mind, but the visuals will be worth seeing.
Mm. Like, have it that she's chasing down Murasaki, who has kidnapped Shun and is holding him at gunpoint saying, leave me to Agatha.
Or stole her crystal radio. And both. It's the last item that is of her father. You know, like,
yeah, both. They need the crystal to do the thing.
And of course, it is the classic thing where, you know, the male protagonist is only doing what he's doing because of a woman. I'm doing it for my wife. You know, it's a family. So it's basic. And you know, I think because this is like, geez, what are we, 15 years on? That feels strange to say, but we're 15 years on since this, and obviously Shinkai's writing has improved immensely over
everything about his work has improved.
However, this really kind of shows that it is of its time, where that classic, you know, Taken, for instance, or, you know, those type of films where it's like the man is doing the thing for the girl who has died or is missing, and that's the only reason they have agency.
Okay, you know what though, that's a trope, and building something without tropes is like saying build me a house without bricks and wood. Like, can be done, but I could just have a house.
Yeah, but he could also be doing it because he wants eternal life. Like, he was a nasty person. I'm trying not to swear.
Here's the thing. Trying not to do an errand.
I think either motive is as good as each other. They are like self-centered, driven by sort of like short-sightedness. They are. I don't disparage the motive. I think it is, you know, as good as it could be.
Yeah.
Well, they did do him justice in that, because if you marry someone, you clearly love them a lot. And if you lose them, especially at such a young age, that's going to impact you, and you're going to deny it. You're going to go through the stages. You're going to try and bargain. You're going to find that. And then you're going to become obsessed with it.
You're just saying that because you got a shiny ring.
Precious.
How many times have you done that since getting it?
First time, actually.
Oh, really?
I'm not a Lord of the Rings fan.
Remember, it's only been 4 days.
Yeah, also that.
Yeah. But, like, I get where you're coming from, but it also kind of feels like the characters, as you mentioned in the chat, are very two-dimensional. Like, well, even one-dimensional. Like, it's 2D. They have one motive and that's it.
They are sort of there to make the story happen, not characters that are part of the story making it happen.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like you said, it's flawed. Still kind of happy that I saw it.
I'm happy I saw it. Emma's not. She hated
mostly because of the pronunciation.
Not just the pronunciation. Oh. She just hated, like, it's like, why are they doing this? This doesn't have any reason to occur. Why did, you know, those guards suddenly back off the moment the guy came, even though they knew that was the guards when the old man comes to meet them at the village?
That was the village chief.
Yeah. But they knew that was his granddaughter. Mm. So wouldn't they have treated them with respect anyway? You know? Yeah,
maybe they just hate kids.
Wasn't she cursed, or they believed she was cursed because they don't understand modern medicine?
Yeah.
And her not being able to speak or hear was like, oh, she's clearly possessed by a demon.
Yeah.
She's possessed by a Quetzalcoatl. Yeah.
No, Quetzalcoatl. Cacal.
Cacal. Cacal. I'm in shock again.
Kawaii-Fi Radio. Why did you have to do that before the bed dropped?
Welcome to ASMR.
Oh dear. So that's what
we're saying. Quetzalcoatl into your ears.
That's where we're going to leave this for this episode. Thanks so much for listening and joining us. Next time we will be back with Dinosaur Anime. It's a full-fledged feature episode, featuring, you know, the gal and dinosaur, and what other animes were there?
What
with dinosaurs?
Animes
you that
is
we
there?
Can scrap together?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, what have we
the,
got?
The kung fu.
The kung fu Godzilla. Dinosaur. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, we got excited at the prospect because of this new dinosaur anime coming out, and then obviously Sam Neill passed away, and we're like, oh damn, well let's honor him with a dinosaur episode, and then we're like, why are there no dinosaur animes?
It feels like there should be.
It feels like it's just Power Rangers type things.
Well, they're accessories, but there's no main plot dinosaurs. Like, you got Dinosaur King, which is like a game about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And then you've got like dinosaurs popping up, Power Rangers, Yu-Gi-Oh, everything else. Like, they pop up everywhere, but they're never quite the main thing.
I actually found a series that was made with one of the Jurassic Park games called Muldoon Logs. Oh. It's sort of like found footage dinosaur horror.
Huh.
And I'm just like, this is incredible. why can't I find dinosaur animes?
Yeah, it's just making me go like, you know, the closest thing we've got to a dinosaur anime is the old Godzilla animated series from like Godzilla 2000.
That, kind of, yes.
Yeah, like it's kind of weird.
Transformers Beast Wars.
I mean, technically you're not wrong.
Okay, so next week we're doing Transformers Beast Wars.
Yeah.
And why Dinobot was right.
Oh, God. Dinobot was my favorite as a kid, not gonna lie.
He was so cool and he talked like this.
He had the sword tail.
So, anyway, next episode we will have a small selection of dinosaur animes. To share with you and have a good chinwag about, along with latest anime news, what we've been watching, and all the usual components.
And then Megatron will talk like this. Yes.
Was Benator.
Oh my god. Well, clearly they're running out of power juice. So with that, you've been listening to Wi-Fi Radio. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time,
watch me some anime.
I need one so badly.
You really shouldn't, my friend. I can hear your heart from here.
I can handle my Red Bull.